Çakşısımdı tenzeni tasmay sevgili ve namaha. Şi çektan yaman bistam, sefi tenzeni bu tere sayan fakadar mahen ve zaki şahsına. Vandışı kapı cübri çağır, fıkısın bayı da çağır, fıkı tenamın kabili bir o bayki. We're reading from the description of autumn. Tenth canto of the Bhagavad Gita, the 20th chapter. And in this chapter, the beautiful scenery of Vrindavan during the rainy season has been described, and now something of the beauty of Vrindavan in the autumn. And this season, and all seasons, and all of Vrindavan is simply meant for Krishna's pleasure. And this is the difference between the material world and the spiritual world, basically. That in the material world, everyone is centering everything around themselves. And their attempts for happiness and satisfaction are based on self-satisfaction. And the result is simply frustration. Frustration and varieties of difficulties and varieties of misery. But the spiritual world, no one thinks for a moment, practically speaking, about themselves, but everyone is centered, their consciousnesses are centered upon pleasing Krishna. And this is the difference, again, between the material world and the spiritual world. And the result is that in the spiritual world, in Goloka Vrindavan, everything is Satchidananda. And this is Satchidananda Vigraha. But everything is composed, is made out of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. Each person is eternally there. Every entity there is conscious. Everyone is conscious. Everything is conscious. And the center of everything is Krishna. And everyone's pleasure, will, and desire is simply to please Krishna. And as soon as one has this consciousness, has that depth of surrender, then practically speaking, one is in the spiritual world, regardless of whether one appears to be in the material world or not. It's a matter of consciousness. And the deeper one's consciousness and one's surrender, and one wishing to give everything to Krishna with love, then the more deeply one is in the spiritual world. So this is Vrindavan. And here, Vrindavan is described in the way of, we're on the 41st verse, and Krishna willing, we shall finish the chapter, but in the way of analogies too. So the description of Vrindavan in the autumn season is given, and then there are metaphors showing how these are positive and negative things for spiritual life. They are pointing through metaphorical examples to positive and negative things of spiritual life. So we'll read the first one. The first one is text 41. Kadarevyastvapo granan karsaka dridase tubi. Yata pranai shravas jnanam tadnaro dena yogina. Translation. In the same way that the practitioners of yoga bring their senses under strict control to check their consciousness from flowing out through the agitated senses, in the same way, the farmers erected strong mud banks to keep the water within their rice fields from draining out. I'll read that again. It's somewhat a complicated and long sentence. In the same way that the practitioners of yoga bring their senses under strict control to check their consciousness from flowing out through the agitated senses. So here's the first half of the example. That the yogis, the strict practitioners of yoga, are those who are serious on the spiritual path. They control their senses. Why? Because wherever the senses go, the mind will follow. Mind is citta, or consciousness. So they control the senses because they fear their senses dwelling on the sense subjects. Why? Because na buddha natesu ramate buddha. The wise person does not do this, places his senses upon the sense objects, because dukkha yona evite. This is the source of misery. If the consciousness goes outside and becomes entangled in the material world, the result of that is dukkha, not sukha. It is misery, not happiness. And one loses one's spiritual advancement. So the yogi keeps the senses under control because their desire is to keep the consciousness focused. Vyavya satnika buddhi ekeha kurunandana. Focused. Vahushaka tunandascha buddhi avyasayena. Not unfocused, but focused on spiritual realization. The senses are focused to keep the consciousness focused. Because if one's consciousness is focused on pleasing Krishna, then the result is, you can compare it in a contemporary example to the difference between diffused light, a light bulb where the light is going everywhere, or a laser. A laser, because the light rays are focused, it has the power to cut through steel. Or looking at it from with another metaphor, when the Ganga, Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yajeta Purusha Para. Tivrena means with power. So when one practices Bhakti Yoga with power, with focus, with deep concentration, then the result of that is all obstacles, all difficulty will be pushed away, just like the Ganga, at the source of the Ganga, at Gomukh or Gangotri, it pushes away huge boulders are pushed away because of the power of the pushing of the Ganga. It is Tivra, forceful, focused. And the example given here, as the yogis control their senses to control their consciousness from being diffused, the farmers erected strong mud banks to keep the water within their rice fields from draining out. The water is there from the rains of the rainy season, and there's not going to be rain for so many months, and the crops must grow. So they, and you see this all over India, all over China as well. You don't see it in Australia or the United States, but in the more the countries where they're more concerned about the ecology of the situation, they preserve the water and they keep it and they don't waste any in that way. And here's the, but through the process of mud walls. Here's the purport here. Srila Prabhupada comments, in autumn, farmers save the water within their fields by building strong walls so that the water contained within the field cannot run out. There is hardly any hope for new rainfall. Therefore, they wanted to save what is in the field. So whatever consciousness one has, Krishna consciousness one has, be it a little or a lot, one should aspire to not waste it. One should save it, not diffuse it, not allow it to just splay out through following the senses. It is advised that after the age of 50, one should retire from family life and conserve the energy of the body for utilization in the advancement of Krishna consciousness. Unless one is able to control the senses and engage them in the transcendental loving service of Mukunda, there is no possibility of salvation. Salvation means mukti, liberation. Mukti means freedom. Freedom from what? Freedom from the bondage of the material world, which means so much difficulty in the material world. There's one difficulty after the next, after the next, after the next. And ultimately, the only way to stop the difficulties coming from the body is to die. And that's not a very good alternative. So what is the liberation from this? The proper way to become liberated is when the soul is freed from the shackles, from the bondage of material consciousness through surrender to Krishna. So therefore Prabhupada says here, unless one is able to control the senses and engage them in the transcendental loving service of Mukunda, there is no possibility of salvation. So by the grace of Mukunda, the giver of liberation, and he whose face, whose face blossoms like a flower, by his grace, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Tu Bhakti, one attains freedom. And we'll read the comment of Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur on this 41st text. The farmer keeps the water lying in the fields after the rainy season from running out with the dikes, just as the yogi concentrates his senses to prevent his consciousness from flowing out due to agitation of the senses. This is a positive comparison. This is what we should follow. We should emulate this. 42. Sarad akamsu jam stapam, sarad arka, the summer sun, the autumn sun, sarad of the sarad season, arka, the sun, amsu jan, tapan, the heat and the suffering generated from the autumn sun, bhutanam, of all the creatures, all when the sun is very intense in the month of September, for example, in Vrindavan, it's very, very intense after the rains and all the moisture evaporates up and it's extremely intense. Then, where is their relief? Udupa arat. The moon takes away the moonlight. It's very cooling and soothing. So it takes away the difficulties. When the sun sets and the moon comes up, it takes away the difficulties that the hot autumn sun bestows upon everyone during that season. So similarly, Deha Abhiman Jam Bodha Mukunda Vraja Yoshitam. Similarly, Krishna, through giving transcendental knowledge, takes away the miseries of material existence. And Mukunda similarly takes away the misery of the Vraja Yoshitam, the ladies of the women of Subrindavan. Here's the translation. The autumn moon relieves all creatures of the suffering caused by the sun's rays. Just as wisdom relieves the person of the miseries caused by his identifying with the material body. Yes, identifying with the material body, it causes miseries. We want to get pleasure, but the result is misery. So wisdom, transcendental knowledge, fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is entitled Transcendental Knowledge. And that that transcendental knowledge, the basic transcendental knowledge, is the difference between me, ourselves, and my body, our bodies. We are different from the body. And when the nahanyate hanyamani sharire, the soul does not die when the body dies. But not only that, does Krishna give that remove that type of distress, but also he relieves Vrindavan's ladies of the distress caused by their separation from him. There's another kind of distress, a spiritual type of distress, caused when the soul is not identifying with the body, but is identifying with his relationship with Krishna. And he cannot tolerate a moment away from Krishna. This is something that's most extraordinary, something that one cannot experience in this world, the ecstasy. from separation from Krishna. This is actually the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to experience Krishna through separation, especially through chanting Krishna's names in separation. And the young Vrishabhasi ladies, they are always feeling separation from Krishna. And a moment seems like a yuga. Yugai tam nimeshena. Nimeshena means the flickering of the eye, the twinkling of the eye, seems like thousands of years to them. They cannot tolerate being away from Krishna for a moment because of the intensity of their love for him. So Krishna takes away the misery of a materialistic person by awarding that person with transcendental knowledge of his eternal life. And he takes away the spiritual separation, seeming distress of the gopis of Vrindavan by awarding them his darshan, his association. So we'll read Srila Sridhar Swami's comment and then comment by Srila Sanatana Goswami to text 42. Srila Sridhar Swami, it's just one sentence he comments. Just as wisdom takes away suffering due to misidentification with the body, and also that wisdom comes from Krishna, his words spoken by him in Bhagavad Gita and spoken about him in Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna Katha. So just as wisdom takes away suffering due to misidentification with the body, and also Mukunda, Krishna, takes away the suffering of the ladies of Braja. Now here's Sanatana Goswami's comment. He says, Sridhar Swami has given the explanation that Krishna is called wisdom. That is, Krishna is wisdom. Because he imparts wisdom. He reveals the truth through the agency of Uddhava and others. And, he's again saying what, paraphrasing what Sridhar Swami has said, that he, Mukunda, has taken away the distress of the ladies of Braja, which is not due to their identification with their material bodies. It is due to something else. They have no other identification other than being Krishna's, and that Krishna is theirs. And then Srila Sanatana Goswami says, I offer my repeated obeisances to him, Sridhar Swami, who has thus shown his imperfect knowledge of the greatness of the transcendental gopis. I also offer my obeisances to his commentaries and to his realization. Krishna always takes away distress due to identification with one's body by giving transcendental knowledge. Another possible explanation is that the word Mukunda indicates how he takes away during the night the gopis' distress, which was based on their being separated from him during the day. Or else he gives knowledge, bodhyati, in the sense of revealing through secret messages, such as the playing of his flute and other means, the whereabouts of himself hidden in the bushes of Vrindavan. Or else of the arrangement, he gives them knowledge of the arrangement for some special pastime of his own. In this way, Bodha, or wisdom, is Lord Mukunda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who bestows special happiness. In the same way as he takes away, by the playing of his enchanting flute and other means, the distress of the ladies of Braja, their special unhappiness in being unable to have Lord Krishna, which is not generated from bodily identification, or which is generated from their bodily identification on a spiritual level, thinking that they are members of aristocratic families and belong to other husbands. So it's a very transcendental explanation given by Srila Sanatana Goswami, which expands upon the hints given by Sridhar Swami. Their bodily identification, their sense of abhiman, sense of self-identification, is a source of their ecstasy and a source of their separation from Krishna, which is the source of their transcendental emotion of separation and transcendental distress. While on the other hand, the materialistic person, they identifying with the body, this is me, as I watch it day by day, crumbling, getting more wrinkly, getting more weak, and then finally, dead. Great distress, and the Bhagavatam has described this in the third and the fourth and the fifth cantos of the Bhagavatam. So very different. Krishna gives one kind of wisdom to remove the distress of the materialistic person, and he gives another kind of knowledge and wisdom to the gopis of how they can meet him. So we have to see which wisdom we are ready for at this particular time. But Krishna will give us what we are ready for, what is suitable for us, because he is very kind. He is an ocean of mercy. Raise your hand if you think Krishna is an ocean of mercy. Raise your hand if you're still undecided. Okay. What do they do in the parliament? They say, all those who vote yea on one side of the room, all those who vote no on the other side of the room, and this is your chance to go on to this side of the room. So we want, this is the purpose of life actually, is to develop this type of Shraddha in Krishna, because where we place our faith, it will be tested when it's time to leave this world. And if we are sheltered by the concept of I have my power and I have my intelligence and I have my influential friends and I have my body, then at the time of death, where will our shelter be? Who will help us then? If we think our hope is in the body, then practically speaking, we are hopeless and helpless. And if we think our hope is in our mind and our friends and our relatives and our bank account and our intelligence and our influence and our strength and our beauty and our fame and whatever it is that we find our shelter is, our car or our computer or whatever it is, we're ultimately helpless. But if we have our faith, if we can develop, and it is not easy to do this, but if we can truly learn to place ourselves in Krishna's hands, which is called Sharanagati, then we are on very firm footing. We will have a proper asraya, a proper shelter. While the material world is called Durasraya, it's a shelter that is actually no shelter at all. It's a will-o'-the-wisp. It's like a flower airplane, a horse, the egg of a horse, not a flower airplane, the flowers in the sky, a horse's egg, something like this, phantasmagoria, Prabhupada will say. There's no shelter in these things, but it's easy to say it, for the words to come from the mouth. But when the difficult tests of life come, where actually is our shelter? This is the thing. And this is what our life is meant to practice, to take our shelter from this side, the material side, and place it at Krishna's lotus feet. And this is what makes someone a sadhu, where Krishna says, sadhariva, someone that is certainly a sadhu. There's one thing, bhajate namam ananyavak, worshipping me without fail, regardless of the circumstance. Sadhariva. And this is the doorway, the beginning of bhakti. So text 40, so the gopis are the topmost position, and therefore Krishna, he gives them a very secret wisdom, the most secret confidential instructions. 43, going back to the description of Vrindavan, free of clouds and filled with clearly visible stars. The autumn sky shone brilliantly, just like the spiritual consciousness of one who has directly experienced the purport of the Vedic scriptures. The purport here, very short. The clear and starry autumn sky can also be compared to the pure heart of the devotee. The spiritual nature is always brilliant, clean, and blissful, and this spiritual nature, called Vaikuntha, immediately satisfies all the desires of the soul. This is the secret of Krishna consciousness. And Srila Sanatana Goswami has a comment here. The cloud represents the covering of passion and ignorance. And by the absence of such, the autumn sky is different from the sky of the rainy season. The autumn sky is devoid of clouds. So now the description of autumn again. So by the absence of such, the clouds or the covering of passion and ignorance, one is endowed with the mode of sattva-gun, the mode of goodness. The sky is called Tara because it causes the whole world to cross beyond darkness, Tarayati, or else Taraka means the moon, because by its own rising or else by initiating the Rasa dance, it delivers all of the gopis from the cycle of material existence or else from the pain of separation. That sky during the autumn is in which this moon, on account of the influence of the autumn season, is very clear, implies that in such a sky, naturally the moon will give an abundant glow. Because of the removal of the modes of passion and ignorance, which are equated with the clouds, the sky is endowed with the mode of goodness in terms of its being full of illumination. The meaning of Sabda Brahma, the Vedas, is the subject matter referred to, Abhideya, namely, Sri Krishna, who is referred to sometimes by direct statements and sometimes by indirect import in the Vedas. He is metaphorically equated with the clear moon, that sky in which the hearts of the devotee, within the heart of the devotee, he is manifest, and Krishna is directly seen before one's eyes. So this comes from purity of consciousness. And purity of consciousness means without the impurities of passionate ignorance. And this is the process of sadhana, is to remove this passion, ignorance from the consciousness. And when the consciousness is pure, then Krishna, and if one is desiring it intensely, then Krishna will manifest within one's heart. Sanatana Goswami is saying. A short comment by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. The full moon, Akanda Mandala, is compared to Swayam Bhagavan Sri Krishna, the full manifestation of the Absolute Truth. As the Lord of the Yadus, Yadupati, Krishna was surrounded by prominent members of the Vishnu dynasty, such as Nanda, Upananda, Vasudeva, and Akura, who are compared to the stars in the sky. This comparison is favorable for meditation. So when one sees the moon in the sky, in the autumn sky, surrounded by the different stars, and the sky is very clear, then one can think of Krishna surrounded by these different devotees. And here, explain the stars are the... Because Krishna is full. That means he is the full manifestation, Sayam Bhagavan. Krishna Stu Bhagavan Sayam. He is the full manifestation of Godhead. Vedanti tat tatva vidas tatvam yajnanam adayam. Bhagavan prameti parama meti Bhagavan iti sabite. The full manifestation, and Krishna is the Swayam Bhagavan. He's the full manifestation of Bhagavat Tattva, of the Absolute Truth. So therefore he's compared to the full moon. Is Krishna compared to the full moon? Yes. Full manifestation, not the partial moon, but the full moon.
Text 45.
Except for the gopis whose hearts had been stolen by Krishna. So this again is the description of the autumn season. The people could forget their suffering by embracing the wind coming from the flower-filled forest. This wind was neither hot nor cold.
Sanatana Goswami comments. That wind, excuse me, the mention of the wind coming from the forest of Malati flowers and other flowers expresses the fine fragrance. These characteristics, which are practically the same as those of spring, were able to alleviate the natural oppression of the autumn sun, but not the suffering of the gopis, which was due to their separation, or else due to the nature of their ecstatic love, because by that wind was generated a special remembrance in the hearts of them, of the gopis, whose mind had been stolen away by Krishna. A special loving sentiment blazed up. So for everyone else, their suffering was extinguished by the cooling, fragrant wind breezes in the autumn season. But for the gopis, that the breezes carried the fragrance that reminded them of Krishna, and that made their transcendental distress blaze. Just like the wind when it passes over a fire, it causes the fire to blaze, the heat of the fire to burst into flame. So similarly, the gopis, that wind carrying the fragrant Malati flowers, caused their hearts to burst into the flames of separation from Krishna. This fact is incidentally mentioned because of the rising of the special feeling. And there's many mentions of the gopis in this chapter, and it's just starting to discuss, to talk about the gopis, the rasa of the gopis with Krishna. Previously, in the earlier chapters in the 10th canto, the focus has been on Sakiras, Krishna's relationship with his friends, and how ecstatic that was, and prior to that, the Vatsalya Bhava, Krishna's relationship with his parents, and the ecstasies that the parents, Nanda Yasoda and the other elderly gopis, experienced by relating with Krishna in love. And then in the last several chapters was more focused on Krishna's friends, such as and Sridham Stoka Krishna, so many friends, Subal. But now the hints are just starting to come in the previous chapter, the Gopinam Paramananda Seed Govinda Darshanaya, and now this one, there's hints of the gopis. And then in the next chapter, the 21st, which is entitled the Venu Gita, then there's an exposition of the sentiments of the gopis in Purvarag before they actually had any meeting with Krishna. It describes their sentiments and how everything, every single thing that they saw in Vrindavan simply reminded them of Krishna. And they thought everyone else was so fortunate. But only they were unfortunate because they didn't have the facility to be with Krishna. So that's in the next chapter, but it's starting to lead to that. The introduction of the gopis is starting to be given here. So except for the gopis whose hearts had been stolen by Krishna, the people could forget their suffering by embracing the wind coming from the flower-filled forest. This wind was neither hot nor cold. So we read Sivatana Goswami's comment here, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has a comment on text 45 as well. The wind of the autumn is neither hot nor cold, samasitoshna. By embracing this wind, everyone felt relief from the heat, except the gopis, who were burning in the pain of separation from Krishna. This is transcendental ecstasy that it is impossible for those who have not been trained in the transcendental science of Krishna consciousness to understand. But it is transcendental, it is cause of ecstasy. Instead of decreasing their suffering, it increases it. Authorities explain the sequence of analogies in this verse as follows. Just like the gopis, whose hearts had been stolen by Krishna, could not embrace him to reclaim their hearts, So the general masses did embrace the wind to get relief from the heat. 46. By the influence of the autumn season, all the cows, doe, women, and female birds became fertile and were followed by their respective mates in search of sexual enjoyment. Just as the activities performed for the loving service of the Supreme Lord are automatically followed by all beneficial results. Interesting analogy here, metaphor. Saying that just as the autumn season naturally, and the sequence of the different seasons, in the autumn season is naturally pregnancy for all the cows, the does, the women and female birds, even. And similarly, the activities performed for the service of the Supreme Lord are automatically followed by all beneficial results, naturally, sequentially. And here is Prabhupada's purport. On the arrival, this is a comment by Prabhupada from the Krishna book, on the arrival of the autumn season, all the cows, the deer, the bird, and females in general become pregnant. Because in that season, generally, all the husbands become impelled by sex desire. This is exactly like the transcendentalist, who, by the grace of the Supreme Lord, are bestowed with the benedictions of their destinations in life. So how do they get it, their destinations? It is bestowed upon them by the Supreme Lord, by Krishna. Srila Rupa Goswami has instructed in his Upadeshamrita that one should perform devotional service with great enthusiasm, patience, and conviction, and should follow the rules and regulations. And then, as a result of that, the ultimate result of Krishna consciousness in its time will come. Prabhupada continues. One should follow the rules and regulations, keep oneself clean from material contamination, and stay in the association of devotees. Havamatra sarasange sarasudihoi asatsanga chag ivaisnava char. By following these principles, one is sure to achieve the desired result of devotional service. So Prabhupada isn't speaking in detail about what the desired result is, but one is sure to achieve it. For he who patiently follows the regulative principles of devotional service, the time will come when he will achieve the result as the wives reap the results of becoming pregnant by becoming pregnant. They want children and their desire is ultimately fulfilled in the natural course. So similarly, if a devotee follows the prescriptions of performing devotional service with great enthusiasm, patience, and conviction, following the rules and regulations, and keeping one from clean from material contamination, and stay in the association of devotees, one is sure to achieve the desired success. Text 47, and there are 49 verses in this chapter. Krishna willing, we shall complete them. In all the towns and villages, people held great festivals, performing. So again, this is a description of Vrindavan during the season of what's going on. And this, and what is going on, ultimately everything, as it turns out, is meant to facilitate Krishna's pastimes and give extra sweetness to Krishna's pastimes. And this next one, this next description, 48, we'll read 47, but 48 talks about all the different festivals. And one of those festivals that facilitated Krishna's pastimes is the festival of the Indra Yajna, which Krishna took to as an opportunity to instigate the performance of Govardhan Puja. But that comes up in text 48, but now 47. O King Parikit, when the autumn sun rose, all the lotus flowers blossomed happily, except the night-blooming Kamut. Just as in the presence of a strong ruler, everyone becomes fearless, except the thieves. So when the summer sun comes up, the lotus flowers blossom happily and their petals go up ecstatically. But one lotus, when the sun comes up, it doesn't. That's the come up. And the analogy is when there's a good, strong government, the people become fearless. They lose their fear of thieves. And everyone becomes fearless except the thieves themselves. They become fearful. So that's very good when the thieves are afraid. So here's the comment to 47 by Sanatana Goswami and then by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. Because the night-blooming Kamuda lotuses are rivals of the lotus which bloom during the day, thus by such enmity is implied a special beauty of the blossoming of all the lotuses except for them. So when the rivers and lakes are full of blossoming lotus flowers, it is especially beautiful. Therefore the idea is that they bloomed abundantly, they bloomed happily. Because of a king, the people in general exhibit their enmity towards thieves. Therefore all the citizens apart from these thieves become extremely happy. Similarly, the lotuses, except for the kamats, blossom. O king, the first words in this text express the idea, because of such a king as yourself, this situation arises. Or else your good self can understand this subject matter. Because Maharaj Prickett was such a king that enforced with his power and his righteousness a good government upon the kingdom. And he stopped Kali, described in the end of the first canto. And Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, comments of 47, short comment. The night-blooming lotus flower, kamud, are compared to thieves, dachyan. This idea comes from the syllable ku, which means low class, and mood, which means joy, low class joy. Low class fellows like thieves find pleasure at night by stealing. Just as all people except the thieves are happy when a powerful king sits on the throne. When the sun rises in the morning, all the lotuses are happy and bloom except the night blooming lotus. 48. They find joy and mood in that which is low. So therefore that's a kamut. Kumut. Lotus of the night blooming lotus compared to the thieves. Text 48. In all the towns and villages, people held great festivals, performing the Vedic fire sacrifice for honoring and tasting the first grains of the new harvest, along with similar celebrations that followed local customs and traditions. So festivals come out in this season because there's a harvest of wheat. We have two harvests a year. This is one of them. Thus the earth, rich with newly grown grain and especially beautified by the presence of Krishna and Balaram, shone beautifully as an expansion of the Supreme Lord. Purport. The word Agriyayanai refers to a particular authorized Vedic sacrifice, and the word Indriyai refers to folk ceremonies that have somewhat worldly objectives. Srila Prabhupada comments as follows. During autumn, the fields become filled with ripened grains. At that time, the people become happy over the harvest and observe various ceremonies, such as Navana, the offering of new grains to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The new grains are first offered to the deities in various temples, and all are invited to take sweet rice made with these new grains. There are other religious ceremonies and methods of worship, particularly in Bengal, where the greatest of all such ceremonies is held called Durga Puja. So there's the Navayatri in Bombay, the Ganesh Pujas, and all the Shivaratris, and the Durga Puja. All these ceremonies are at this time, held at these times. Comment of Sanatana Goswami, to text 48. In the cities means, in the cities, the towns and villages, in the cities and villages means either Mathura and other similar places, or else in such places, in the towns, the villages, as the residence of Sri Nanda, the temple of Nandishwar, and so forth. And the villages means in such places situated within Sri Vrindavan as the capital of the king of the cowherds in Nandishwar, Nandagram. By the two expansions of Lord Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Narayana, namely Sri Krishna and Rama, whose forms are super excellently beautiful because of their manifesting their own status of Godhead complete in all aspects. So Vrindavan, and the festivals make everything beautiful, but Krishna and Balaram make everything especially beautiful as they mark their feet, their footprints all over the dust of Vrindavan. And all the animals and all the people respect those footprints and they will not step on them or over them. So they really beautify the land of Vrindavan. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments. The word Agrayana refers to Vedic sacrifices called Navana, Navaana, new grains, whereas the freshly harvested grains are offered to the deity in the temple. The Smriti scriptures say that the Navana ceremony should not be performed on the Nanda Tithi, while Vishnu is sleeping during the Chaturmasya, during the waning phase of the moon, Krishna Paksha, or during the months of Kartik and Pausha. The Navana ceremony occurs in the Agrahayana month, Magashirsha, November, December, just after the Uttana Ekadasi. That's the last Ekadasi in Kartik, Damodar month. However, because it takes place right after the autumn season, it is said to take place during the autumn. The word Indriyais refers to the sacrifices for Indra to satisfy the senses. These are the same comments made here. This description took place before the year in which Krishna stopped Indra's worship. Just as the earth, Bhu, a potency, Kala Shakti of Lord Hari, shone beautifully by the presence of Krishna and Balaram, so the earth became resplendent with the festivals of Navana and the worship of Indra in the villages. The word Hari also means moon, so Kalabhyam Hare means by the phases of the moon. Just as the earth became splendid with the festivals held by the king celebrating the phases of the moon on the first and second tithis of the waxing moon as it rose in the evening, so the earth became beautified with the many festivals held in the villages. And then the final verse of the chapter, and the final verse we'll read. The merchants, sages, kings, and brahmachari students, kept in by the rain, were at last free to go out and attain their desired objects, just as those who achieve perfection in this life can, when their proper time comes, leave the material body and attain their respective forms. Very interesting purport here. Srila Prabhupada comments. In Vrindavan, the autumn season was very beautiful. Then because of the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna and Balaram. The Merkatar community, the royal order, and the great sages were free to move and achieve their desired benedictions. Because during the rainy seasons, no one can move around. So the people are the merchants, the sages, the kings, and the brahmacharis. They all are kept restricted by the rainy season. But when the autumn season comes, they all move about and get and fulfill their desires. But the desires of the sages, the kings, the merchants, and the brahmacharis are all different. Yet, their desires are nevertheless fulfilled. The transcendentalists, when freed from the encagement of the material body, so just as when the restrictions are caused by the rain are removed and they can fulfill their desires, the transcendentalists, when freed from the encagement of the material body, also achieve their desired goal. During the rainy season, the mercantile community cannot move from one place to another and do not get their desired profit. Nor can the royal order go from one place to another to collect taxes from the people. As for saintly persons who must travel to preach transcendental knowledge, they also are restrained by the rainy season. But during the autumn season, all of them leave their confines. In the case of the transcendentalist, be he a jnani, a yogi, or a devotee, because of the material body, he cannot actually enjoy spiritual achievement. But as soon as he gives up the body, or after death, The jnani merges into the spiritual effulgence of the Supreme Lord. The yogi transfers himself to the various higher planets, and the devotee goes to the planet of the Supreme Lord, Goloka Vrindavan, or the Vaikunthas, and thus enjoys his eternal spiritual life. Quite interesting. And then, final comment here by Sanatana Goswami, Sridhar Swami, and then a final comment by Sanatana Goswami. Sridhar Swami's comment is quite small, short, and so is Sanatana Goswami's. Merchants, sannyasis, kings, and brahmacharis kept collected together during the rainy season. This is a comment of Srila Sridhar Swami. Either by intention or by unforeseen providence, then going out when the fall begins, the autumn begins, they attain their desired objects, respectively, commerce by the mercantile people, freedom for the kings, and freedoms and for the sannyasis, conquest for the kings, wisdom for the brahmacharis. This is just as those who have been perfect become perfect by chanting mantras, by yoga, and other processes are kept back by the duration of their lives. But then the proper time comes, they obtain their proper corporal forms, the bodies of demigods and so on, that are achieved by their practice of yoga and other means. So everything has its time according to our desire and our practices. And according to our karma, we are somewhat restricted by our material bodies. But if one performs one's sadhana or practices properly, then the results will come at a later time. Sanatana Goswami comments. The verse beginning Vani is to be understood in just the way that it has been explained by Sridhar Swami. But alternatively, Siddha means those who are Jivan Mukta, who are covered by monist knowledge, which is compared to the rain which covers the sun of devotional service. They too can be rendered submissive. So he's changing it. He's saying, Sanatana Goswami said that the rainy season restricts the impersonalists by covering who they actually are with the clouds and the rain of impersonal knowledge. But they too can become submissive, because the impersonalists are not submissive. They want to become God. They want to become the Supreme. They want to become one with Him. They don't want to serve Him. But they too, their coverings can be removed. How? By the ecstasy of uninterrupted association of saintly devotees, which is like the rainfall. Or else by achieving of Sri Vaikuntha Loka through the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When the time has arrived, just as they achieve their suitable bodies, they attain the bodies of personal associates of the Supreme Lord, and those bodies are composed of pure Satchitananda, spiritual bliss, knowledge, and eternity. This is favorable, Vishwanath Bhagavatam, I would say. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Vrindavan Dham ki jai, Sri Krishna Balaram ki jai, Sri Gaura Nithai ki jai, Gaura Bhaktavinda ki jai.